Hi everybody, hope you're well. My name is Jim Carroll. Welcome you to the latest in a special series of banter podcasts from Web Summit 2015 at Dublin's RDS. Dara Hickey is one of the co-founders of Web Summit, so as you can imagine, he has a lot to say about the avalanche of issues and news stories around this year's event. He joined us at Banter to talk about the growth of Web Summit, their interactions with government, Enda Kenny, the issues with the Dublin event this year, the Lisbon angles, media agendas, Foodgate, and yes, that Sharon Avril-On interview. Hi everybody, welcome along to another Banter podcast here at Web Summit 2015. We are joined by one of the people who is responsible for every single person being in Dublin for this weekend. We're joined by Dara Hickey. Good evening.
Good evening, Jim.
How are you?
Great.
Honestly, how are you?
Really good. I mean, this is day two, so day two of three. So I feel like we've kind of gotten into a stride and we've like gotten over some hiccups and all of that. I feel like I've sat down for the first time in 2 days, which is really nice. But I mean, the feedback that we've had from most people is being really, really positive and looking on Twitter.
Most people. We'll come to that in a bit.
Oh, absolutely.
You can't win everyone. I want to kind of go back there, though. Like, I mean, I want to kind of, I suppose, I saw your photo walking around earlier on, and I was kind of going, like, I know basically that, like, and you started out working, your first job was kind of like doing work experience in the Examiner, and he was there, wasn't it?
When my dad was a technology journalist back in the day, and we used to dial up to the Microsoft network in London, and I get 1 hour of internet a week when I was about 12 years of age. And then I started writing about the internet, and some of his colleagues said it was really interesting to have this young person writing about the internet, this like kind of bizarre concept that it was then. So I wrote a few articles about the internet then, and then, you know, went to college and started...
What did you do in college?
I studied business and economics in Trinity, and that's where I met Paddy for the first time. I walked in the gates of Trinity, and Paddy was like this big man on campus. He was president of the Philosophical Society in Trinity, which, as we all know, is not terribly philosophical. in fact, his first guest that week as president was Ron Jeremy, the famous porn star, nicknamed the Hedgehog. Yeah. So that was kind of interesting.
But that was interesting though, like, because I mean, if Paddy was involved with the Phil, you know, the great thing about the Phil is that they can get these guests, they get names in, they do
a Web
Summit for the Web Summit.
An incredible history, and I think that's where Paddy and I both learned how to convince people to come to Ireland, to drop everything and come to Ireland. So Paddy had people like John McCain and Archbishop Tutu, and I had people like Al Pacino, Oliver Stone, Justice Ginsburg, the US Supreme Court Justice, and a lot of David Hasselhoff, and lots of other interesting people.
The late, great David Carr described you as a gangster. He described you and Paddy as a pair of gangsters, in the nicest possible way, genial. You know, you were able to persuade these people to come over. Talk to me about, like, I mean, how you persuade someone like Al Pacino to come over to Trinity. Is it the fact that it's Trinity? Is it the fact that it's an award? Is it the fact it's Ireland? Is it the fact that it's some gobby youngster on the end of an email or phone?
Yeah, I mean, Paddy actually came up with this really interesting concept called the honorary patronage, and giving people an award to come to Trinity rather than just inviting them. And he crafted this incredible invite that talked about the history of the society, that this was the place that Wilde and Carson first sparred, and that, you know, that it had this incredible history of bringing these great philosophers and interesting people. And I think what the interesting thing about the Phil was, and what we realized, is it's really, really nice for all of these stars and incredible people to be invited by young people to go somewhere. And I think they all care very much about their legacy, and they care about the impression that they're making on the next generation. And that's why people came to the Phil. Then I guess he leveraged the Phil and all of that in starting the Web Summit. So Jack Dorsey on Twitter, Chad Hurley of YouTube, Nicholas Centrum of Skype, they were all invited to the Phil to come and speak on the same day. And then Paddy said, and this is maybe why we might be described in the way that we are, and I think we're not any different to many other startups. You know, you're trying to kind of say these future truths of things that may come together. But he said, look, hey, there's also this kind of technology conference happening around the same time. Would you guys be interested in speaking at that too? And luckily they all said yes. And that was the start of the Web Summit, this unknown tech conference that didn't really happen before. And suddenly had the founders of YouTube, Skype and Twitter coming. And I guess what Paddy had and what, you know, what I had was this ambition to, and David too, our third co-founder, this ambition to grow it bigger and bigger. And that's what's happened over the last few years.
Yeah, you've talked a lot about what Paddy did, Paddy did this, Paddy did that. You know, you're downplaying your own role there. I mean, did you divide the roles up between the three? What were your particular roles?
Yeah, so my role was editorial. So I was responsible for all of the content that you see on the stages. You know, since then, it's changed somewhat in that now we have 130 people, so I don't do all of the content. There's 800 speakers, so it's very difficult to do all of the content. But at the very, very start, I was responsible for all of the content, all of the press, and founders. Our founders kind of a luxury brand, so to speak.
Yeah.
So that was my responsibility. And I guess one of the things that I'm kind of most proud of is, you know, trying to convince journalists for the first time to come to this event. So we got the Irish Press and they were really, really interested, and the Irish Times and Silicon Republic really saw it and were supportive, and RT, and it was really, really great in the Indo. But we really wanted to make this an international thing. So we reached out to Bloomberg, and I said, in 2010, I said that, you know, the Irish economy is obviously collapsing. And they said, yeah, we know that the IMF are coming in, and, you know, we've been here on the ground in Ireland. We've covered that story. It's done. We're bored. We're not interested. And I said, well, did you know that 19 of the top internet companies in Ireland are coming in, and they're gonna cover, 19 of the top 20 internet companies are actually based in Ireland, and that these three leaders, the founders of YouTube, Skype, and Twitter, are coming into Ireland. They're going to talk about the future of Ireland, the future of tech, et cetera, et cetera. And that was an angle they were really, really interested in. We managed to secure an interview from Jack Dorsey to Bloomberg Television. They went big on it. They gave us 80 minutes of primetime TV on Bloomberg TV. Then we leveraged that and told CNBC the Bloomberg are coming. We told them that CNN are coming. Then they all came in. The Wall Street Journal came in, Wired, TechCrunch, yeah, et cetera, et cetera. And people had a really, really good time. And I guess I spent some time as a journalist, and I know that at the end of the day, journalists want to meet the talent. They want to have a one-to-one relationship.
They want to get behind the velvet.
Yeah, so we didn't allow PR people into our founders' event. And we told journalists that it's off the record unless you explicitly ask for an interview. But why we're doing that is that we want to give you access. We want to put you in a room where you can casually develop and build a relationship with somebody where they can trust you, you can trust them. And if you guys want to do an interview afterwards, that's great. And I think they really, really loved it, and they loved what we were trying to do. And that kind of helped build our brand.
Okay, so that was the early days then, you know, you're building your brand up. I mean, I remember being at the first couple of Web Summits, you know, you can see the growth. And I think 2012 was the year it sort of like it was a tipping point, you know. And also, excuse me, around 2012 or so as well, it became a situation where Web Summit began to get traction beyond those people you're talking about, beyond the kind of like the tech industry. It began to kind of like, I mean, the Irish government started to get involved. Mm-hmm. You know, you were getting kind of mainstream press. How do you manage something like that?
How did it start? How do we manage?
How do you manage it when it happens? Because it's something that's very, very hard to plan. It's something that kind of like it happens very, very naturally. You get that sort of traction.
It was something that we always wanted. It actually kind of started. It started with, we did this cloud computing event, and Enterprise Ireland kind of pushed us to bring in all these people from across Europe, and suddenly we had CTOs from Morgan Stanley and from these huge kind of Fortune 500 companies who are coming in. And we thought, hell, like if they're coming in, then we should really, really try to actively get more and more of those people. And we started going into more and more topics and putting on more and more stages. We suddenly added a marketing stage. And the marketing stage straddled marketing and technology, but then brands started to come in. And I started talking. I was at Cannes Lions Festival 2 years ago, and I reached out to this brand, the guys who were behind making Beats as a brand, and I said, look, I'd really, really like you to come to Web Summit. He goes, I'm already coming. And I said, how do you know? And he said, well, you know, we go to Cannes to meet each other. We go to the Web Summit to find out about new technology, to find out about startups. We go there so that we're ahead of everything else. I thought that was really, really interesting. I think the world also became obsessed with these brand new companies. And now they're, you know, Oculus Rift and people like that. Before it was Instagram and Foursquare and Twitter, that they were really small, relatively small and taking off. And everybody wanted to hear what they should be doing, how they should interact. Everybody from banks to brands. And this became that kind of platform, and people naturally became interested. And I think when you look at the very, very start of the Web Summit, it wasn't just startups. You had just anyone who was interested in technology. We used to run sessions on, like, how-to sessions on social media. And I think it became very, very accessible. And we always thought, you know, we've got to do all these different stages that are at different levels. So the enterprise stage is like, it's pretty high level, pretty high brow. It's kind of technical. Our builder stage, very, very technical. The marketing stage, not so technical. You know, it's much more accessible. The center stage is a very mixture of content. We brought in the library stage over the last few years, which is like bringing in society and philosophy. And actually, it actually came from something that you said. You said a couple of years back, you know, why aren't these kind of, why do we just get these 15-minute snippets? Why do we not have, you know, longer-form content? And there's a reason, and we have a whole theory about why it should be short and everything like that. My background for a while was in television, but we had the library stage to allow for those longer conversations. Mm-hmm. And I think, you know, that's something that will continue. It's society stage this year, and I think next year it'll probably grow and grow and grow as well.
Yeah, but next year, obviously, it'll grow and grow elsewhere, you know? Mm-hmm. So, I mean, I'm curious about, like, I mean, how you deal with being in the center of the storm. The last couple of months, from Web Summit's point of view, has been pretty mental. When I've got my mother talking to me about Web Summit and Paddy Cosgrove, I know things have kind of, like, into the whole new realm. You know, it's been fairly fierce, Dara, you know? I mean, mm-hmm. on your side, you've been kind of pointing out what the government has done. The government have kind of kicked back like you expect them to do, and they've spun their side as well. Like, in the middle of it all, you know, I mean, there is kind of like, I mean, this event which is happening here in Dublin, it's pulling in so many people. Mm-hmm. It's very successful for all these kind of people. Like, coping with that, I mean, what's been the hardest thing to cope with? Has it been like what you see as kind of like a spinning from the government side? Has it been like, I mean, a bizarre agenda that you've been talking about in the media? Like, what's been the hardest thing to actually kind of get to grips with?
I think the hardest thing for us is that I guess we started talking about our problems, which we see as relatively basic, over the last kind of two and a half years. And, you know, we never made any threats of moving out of Ireland 2 years ago. You know, we talked about really basic things like, we're just worried that people get stuck in traffic for an hour trying to go to the RDS. Mm. And that's probably because you have all of these people coming in and they take taxis as individuals to the RDS, and we were trying to help change their mindset and try and say, well, if we put on buses and free buses and things like that, then maybe they'll take buses and it'll ease the traffic for everybody and local citizens and blah, blah, blah. And then you get really frustrated when, you know, you've convinced this startup to come to the Web Summit and they say, oh, I can't come because it's going to cost $2,500 for a hotel for, you know, for me, or blah, blah, blah. Or you see some of these, you know, 2-star hotels or like a room above a pub that would usually be 50 quid charging like 600 quid, 1,000. I think Paddy in particular is incredibly passionate as an entrepreneur, and he really likes to call out things that he feels are wrong. Some of those things, and he calls some of those things out. And Kenny, when he was here last year, said, look, if there's anything I can do to help, let me know. And Paddy said, well, actually, there's a few things. If you could help us with those, that would be great. And the government said, what would be your ultimate wish list? So we, you know, you put on all of the bells and whistles. So things like VIP escorts and stuff, which people got really, really exercised.
Now, but like VIP escorts exist anyway. I mean,
yeah,
like
they do exist. Sport. And actually, and in fairness, in the past, they have provided us with VIP. They've been really, really obliging. And what we just said is, let's just put it down on paper because you've asked us what we want. So we'll put that down and whatever, and we'll put down all of the different things. I think the frustrating thing is people were saying, you're asking for all these things. You're a private company. What do you expect? We were asked what we wanted. And we didn't even get to the, people said, would you be willing to pay for them? We never even got to that part of the conversation, you know, where
would
we
be willing to pay for them?
Yeah, no, absolutely. I think if they said, look, we're going to put these Gardaí here, we're going to close these roads, we're going to do this, it's going to cost here, we're going to take this cost, you take that cost, whatever. Absolutely. We didn't get there. Like, the conversation never evolved.
Do you think you were naive?
I think we're young, ambitious. I think we push things. Because I mean, there's a certain level of naivety.
Yeah, what struck me was, like, you know, that it was a bit like, you know, you were playing hurling, but they were playing junior hurling, dirty hurling. You know, I mean, I kind of got the feeling, especially when you talk
there. We're a startup. I think everything we do is kind of quick and dirty. Like, it's like everything that we do is kind of quick and dirty. I think the Web Summit as a product has, like, evolved, and it's a little bit nicer every year. Mm. You know, it gets a little bit kind of cleaner and like a little bit more polished. But, you know, we're young guys running our kind of our first businesses, and we're kind of, you get really frustrated. You've got so many things on your plate, and you call out what you see as wrongs and all of that. Yeah, I don't know.
Like, I mean, this year there's been a lot of criticism about the food side of things. I mean, last couple of years, the food summit was free of charge. This year, you charged €20 for it. What was the thinking behind that? And you think you could have done it differently?
Yeah, I think what we learned, and what you saw on Twitter was like a picture of a burger and a water for €20. That's not really the case. You don't need to go into like great detail, but you get a snack, you get your main course, you get a dessert, you get a burger, you get a coffee for €20. I think if we were doing it tomorrow, you'd probably give people a €5 option, you know, a €10 option, a €20 option.
Did all the vendors know about this, Dara?
Did all of the vendors know that the €20 cost? Yeah. So we work with Good Food Ireland. So between us and Good Food Ireland, and they would have communicated it. So we work directly with them. They work with all of the vendors. They get them. They select them. They decide what they're doing. So they would know about the cost of everything. Mm.
This is like, you know, you're a fairly sus individual, and you've kind of you've done your time in the media. Did it surprise you about the kind of like the media hubbub over Enda Kenny's invitation?
What was interesting is, I think, you know, we talk about like living, moving on, et cetera, et cetera. We hadn't said anything. There's a piece in the Sunday Business Post, which is Enda Kenny wasn't invited to the Web Summit. And I just wonder why that story what was the purpose of that story? Why it was put out there? We didn't say Enda Kenny wasn't invited to the Web Summit. As far as we're concerned, we had conversations with him over the last year, fully aware of the date of the Web Summit. At several stages, I'm sure I can pull up emails, at several stages, where I said, hey guys, what would you like to do with the Web Summit? You know, what exactly would you like to do this year, et cetera, et cetera. And I think if anybody in his office had reached out and said, Enda was thinking of doing a press conference, they're doing one tonight, Richard Bruton did one earlier today, Enda was thinking of doing that, we would have said, great, no problem, whatever. One of the things is, for the last 2 years, he did the NASDAQ Bell, which we did during the day. For logistical reasons for them, they had to move it late into the evening, et cetera, et cetera. So the thing that he has normally done for the last 2 years didn't operate in the same way. It wasn't kind of practical for him to do, because he does a press conference on that day, et cetera, et cetera.
So he'd like to have been here to ring a bell.
No, I'm not saying that he'd like to, but that's what he has done for the last 2 years. But I mean, he was welcome, and he is welcome if he wants to come down tomorrow. And I guess it looks like a really poor reflection on us that we didn't kind of send an invite, but that's certainly not our intention. Yeah. I don't think we're going to offend him gravely. I hope he's not offended. And Richard Bruton is here. I met Martin Shannon, the CEO of the IDA, yesterday. I took him around to meet Michael Dell. I know he's done a number of other meetings. I think what Paddy said in the past about all of this is, we have asked them over the last few years, we've suggested a million things for them to do, and things where they could do more and more and more. We just see this as the greatest possible opportunity. Maybe that's like a little too self-indulgent. And as Paddy also said, they also do have other priorities. Yeah. But we just see it as like, you could do so much at the Web Summit.
Like, let's parse a little bit that kind of, you could do so much. It struck me over the last couple of years coming here that, like, you know, that the government like have a certain, there's a certain currency which the cabinet like to deal in, and that's jobs. They like to announce things that have jobs
every
attached.
Every year.
500 jobs. Yeah, mm-hmm. 500 jobs. Not even with you, even Dara. I mean, recently they were like, I mean, had photo opportunities. Three ministers turned up from Workday were announcing jobs up in Smithfield. You know, so jobs is a great currency because everyone understands jobs. But the workplace has changed, you know, and like something like Web Summit to me is not about jobs. It's about like connections, networking. It's about those bilateral meetings that were held. You know, it's about like those kind of connections. It's about soft power in many ways. Do you think, you know, in some respects that maybe the government hasn't quite got the grips with the way the workplace has changed and the way those kind of economics has changed?
Yes and no. And yes, and I go back to the Web Summit, and you know, Paddy's made these points as well. There could be a range of ministers down here networking and meeting all sorts of individuals. And some could be related to prospective jobs. Some could be just informing themselves of, you know, trends, policy, what's happening, all of those kinds of things. And we would welcome them all. We never charged a minister to attend or anything like that. You know, if they're interested, and lots of TDs probably over the year have come down to do various different things and being involved in different ways. We wanted to see more and more of that. And I guess we kept saying that you're welcome. We'd love to have you. We'd love to have you. And they kept saying, yeah, we'll do the jobs announcement and we'll do the photograph and the photo call. And we said, no, that's great. Happy to oblige you. But you can do so much more. Come and do more. And Paddy, in particular, is incredibly passionate about Ireland. And that's why, and even yesterday, Sharon Evelyn was asking, you know, how much were you offered? And I was like, very clear, 1.4 million euros, that's how much we were offered. But we were very happy to, and we send this in emails, we're very happy to not take the 1.4 million, stay in Ireland for another couple of years, if we can just ensure that we can have the best possible product. Because that allows us to grow, and it makes sure that everybody's happy. It's frankly, it's a little easier to stay in Ireland. Mm. It's a country that we know, we care about it. People, you know, I guess we had like really good super, super positivity until like a few weeks ago when we announced we were leaving and stuff. So it would have been easier for us to stay. And
There's parallels actually in the last couple of weeks between two new stories. One obviously is a web summit, the other is kind of Billy Walsh, the boxing coach, and like him heading off to America. And like, it looks like, I mean, money again wasn't, like you said, money wasn't an issue when he came to Lisbon. Money was an issue for him, you know. Like, I mean, do you think that that's more kind of emblematic of something about Irish culture than anything else?
I think there's a huge difficulty with government and large organizations in dealing with things that are unique and don't fit into a box. Like, we talked a few years ago to government about how great this is for brand Ireland. I think people will, I don't know how you decipher what value that is. Like, and it's a little bit different to other larger events than us, like the Young Scientists or the Ploughing Championships, which are kind of internal events that we do, and they're incredible. And, you know, they do so much for the economy. But this has this bizarre halo effect for Ireland. And I think you can't kind of put a value on it. And I think we're not one of those nations that that traditionally brings in large conferences and stuff. And we kept saying, this is your opportunity to become one of those people. You know, if the Web Summit is worth 100 million, imagine if you had 10 Web Summit type conferences, right? And you just kind of used us as a test case and you fixed a couple of those things and we grew and grew and grew. You go out to the market and say, hey, you know, forget about doing your event in Cologne or Birmingham or wherever it is. Do it in bloody Dublin. It's incredibly well connected. Everybody has the crack. You know, we've talked to the Hotel Federation and they can ensure that you've good rates. There's this great venue, the RDS. There's these other venues, etc., etc. We sort out transport. We'll sort out everything, and that's what we were kind of saying. I think.
Do you think the will to do all that was, it just isn't there?
You know, I think the will. No, I do think the will is there. There's a will. Well, if you're to believe what we were told, I think there's a will. I think there's just a lack of coordination. But I don't think that Ireland is unique. One of the things I hate, and I spend an awful lot of time traveling and stuff, and particularly meeting like Irish emigrants abroad, is this thing that we do where we say only in Ireland, sure, nowhere else you wouldn't get it. And I think it's bullshit. Like, it's like, you look at the fact that half of the British cabinet went to school together. Like, Berlusconi is a kind of a, you know, and you've had all sorts of accusations against all sorts of governments, and I just don't think that we're unique. I think we really beat ourselves up, and I think it's like, it's a little unfair. I think this is a great country in many ways. I'm really sad that the Web Summit has had to leave. I do think there's a great opportunity that for the government to change things, and maybe it'll be an incredible place for us to do conferences, and we could potentially bring the Web Summit back. You know, we've said the things that we want to make it work. If those things changed over the next 3 years, we could definitely bring the Web Summit back.
I mean, it's interesting what you say. Like, I mean, the about the kind of the infrastructure stuff. I was in Bilbao last week, and it just struck me. Bilbao is a city of kind of 400,000 people. They have a fuck off metro service. They have a great tram lines, great buses, and they have a massive convention center on the edge of town. That's like, it's like at least three times the size of the RDS. Like, I mean, Wi-Fi works fine. You know, the whole infrastructure is there. That's Bilbao. You know what I mean? That's like, you know, and like,
imagine what that brings to the city in terms of,
see,
like,
this is the thing. Like, I mean, yeah. I went actually to
for figures.
It's underutilized. It's totally underutilized. But one reason why it's underutilized is because in order to kind of get there from the States or from kind of like often from the UK, you have to get two flights.
But how many flights do we have from the States? Like, it's incredible. Like, there's what, like 4, 5, 6, 7 flights from New York alone.
It's 16 flights.
It's incredible. And the new flights from LA and elsewhere. It's an incredibly well connected city. I mean, it's a huge opportunity.
Then let's move on then to, like, I mean, next year in Lisbon. Let's look forward to Lisbon then. You know, you're going to be there for 3 years. You've got the money from the Portuguese government or the city council. You know you're going to be there. You know the place you're going to be. it's going to be different. Obviously, it's going to be different. Do you think that many the same audience who come to Dublin are going to go to Lisbon for a start? And also, do you think, well, what are the special attributes of Lisbon? Like, I mean, Dublin has got great soft power. You mentioned there, but people come and having the crack. Yeah. Like, it's a friendly city. You speak English. You know, the weather is shit, but that doesn't matter. But like, in terms of Lisbon, you know, what are the special attributes you think are going to attract the 42,000 people who are here over the weekend?
Well, firstly, 85-90% of our audience comes from abroad. So I think for many of them, they like the idea of going somewhere a little bit warmer in November. That's like a slight respite, which is nice. For a lot of our audience, and it was interesting talking to speakers as I have over the last few years and stuff, they've been coming here for four years and loved it. But, you know, some of them get bored coming to the same places and doing the same things at the same time of the year. And the idea of going somewhere new with the website is incredibly appealing. I think Lisbon is one of those, another like secondary city. It's not a London or a Paris. I don't think the website would ever work in London and Paris. Mm. I think it's like a small enough city, you know, but it's a well-resourced city as well. It's small enough where we can kind of make an impact and create a buzz in the city. They're certainly incredibly enthusiastic about us coming there. That makes things easier, giving you access to kind of cool venues and stuff like that. And we've been looking in the past to use some really cool venues in Dublin, which they've given us access to. Hopefully we'll have the same in Lisbon. It certainly feels that way. One of the things that we always wondered is, can you replicate the kind of the night summit and the stuff that we do in Dublin? Can you replicate that elsewhere? We ran an event in Hong Kong in June, and we started doing pub crawls, and people said, are you mental? Like, you know, the Asian culture is different. You know, they won't understand. And they were also saying, they treat conferences differently. They don't do the things that you do. And we were kind of thinking, but we feel that kind of startups in the tech sector is more homogenous maybe than cultures in general, and that maybe we can do these things. So we brought pub crawls to Hong Kong, and it was incredible, and it had a very similar vibe to Dublin in that everybody was going out and having the crack. The city thought it was amazing because they hadn't seen a conference like it with the same kind of attitude and joie de vivre that the Web Summit has. And I think we can do that in Lisbon. I think that we can emulate what we've done here, and I think Dublin has certainly been an incredible place to incubate the Web Summit, but as we grow, and I think, you know, this venue has been good, but it would be nicer if we didn't have to walk, you know, 10-12 minutes to get from one side of the venue to the other side of the venue, if things were just a little bit more squashed together and we had more space for everybody to do things and all of those kinds of things.
Okay, two final questions, Darren. Thank you very much for your time. I really appreciate the fact you've taken time to come over and talk to us. I mean, I just like how, especially how busy you are. First question, did you get cross with Sharon Evil on last night?
So no, I don't think I got cross with Sharon Evil on. I think she asked some hard-hitting questions. They're all questions that I'm happy to answer. I think you've asked some of those questions, some similar questions. I'm happy to answer any questions about the website and be incredibly transparent. It's difficult to answer some of those questions because she kept kind of firing at me. Yeah. Firing questions.
I've got 25 minutes. She had maybe two
No, exactly.
Minutes,
you know? She had, I think it was 6 minutes long. She had 6 minutes long. Also, the funny thing at the end of it is, and I didn't notice this, and Eleanor, who's on our team, didn't notice this at all. But it looks like I kind of ripped off my mic in disgust. It looks like it at the end that I ripped off my mic in disgust and like put it down. And Joe.ie and The Independent have kind of like, they've said that I did that. But from my perspective, I simply kind of took off my mic as you kind of pull it out, right? And then I kind of dropped my battery pack down, but it was all in shot. So it just looked like I was like really, really angry. I think her questions were very fair. It's a pity I just didn't have a little bit more time to answer them.
Okay, last question then. I've heard kind of like I've heard various people over the last couple of days taking me aside and kind of whispering in a conspiracy theory like way about like what's going to happen next year. It's going to be all these replacement web summits coming to Dublin. Like X, Y, and Z are going to set stuff up. And I'm just taking grand. Why weren't these fuckers around? Why did it take like me and Paddy, yourself and Dave, doing something to kind of do this? Why do you think it's a case here in Ireland that we wait for someone else to do something and then we decide to copy them?
That's an interesting question.
When someone says it's an interesting question, it means they're looking for time to think.
I am looking for a little bit of time to think. I think it's very difficult to copy the Web Summit unless you're us, or maybe there's like one or two other people. I'm trying to think exactly who they are. I don't know, like maybe the South by Southwest guys. They, you know, they do. They've got a cool product. Maybe they could do something. There aren't that many people who can kind of do what we do and do it on scale and all of that. Or maybe something totally new and fresh will start, and it won't be 30,000 people or anything like that, but it may grow and blossom into something else, and it may be a little bit different. And I think if you wanted to do something, that would be the best way to do it. I don't think that you should kind of look at the Web Summit and try and become a copycat and emulate exactly what happens. I think we've built this over time. It's very difficult to just replace it. I mean, we spend so much time, and I spend so much of my time spending 20-something days in the road a month out meeting people and making sure they're happy and convincing them to come to Dublin. And then, you know, it's this network effect where they convince their friends to come and so on and so forth. And you build those relationships over the last 5 years, and you make all those phone calls and send all of those emails, and people start to come. And they come because you look after them and because they meet their friends and all of that. It's very difficult to just start that. Like say, voila, here's a tech event. It's in Dublin and it's going to be 20,000 people and everybody's going to be there. Nobody believes that, you know, it doesn't happen like that. You have to have like a reputation for doing that. And there's like, there's one or two people who can do that. But as I said, there's probably a million other events that could, you know, that could get better. And there's probably a million other kind of types of big, cool, cultural, techie type things that could happen. And the best of luck to them. And, you know, I'd love to see more and more cool events for me to go to. I'd love to go to them. Love going to other people's events. Like there's some great events in Europe. A tech event like Slush. Love to go to Cannes Lions. I go to South by. I go to loads of other events and really, really enjoy it.
Great. Dara Hickey, thank you very much for your time.
Thanks, Jim.
Thanks a million to Dara for joining us at Banter, and Mary, Eleanor, Mike, and all of the Web Summit Media team for their help with this series of interviews. This podcast was recorded and produced by Garrett Hines. We hope you've enjoyed this interview. Please remember to check out our other podcasts from Web Summit 2015 and, of course, our regular series of Banter podcasts. You can find these and details of all upcoming Banter events at thisisbanter.com. We'll talk to you soon.